So he goes about it in what seems to be a rather complex fashion. He sends Eliezer, and he gives Eliezer like a mysterious charge. There's some kind of a, something's unclear. Eliezer, you go, you'll find out. Somehow it'll work out. Eliezer goes blind, you know, he like takes his entourage and he goes to the place that Avraham Avinu came from. And he wanders around, and he comes to this well, and he's sort of like tired out. Along comes this girl, it's like a movie, right? The girl comes along, and she's the girl, right? There's like a light pops out in the, you know, on the film, and he says, you're the one, and that's the end of it. And that's the beginning and the end of the story. Then he has to go, of course, to her father, explain to her father that she should marry the son of Avraham Avinu, who is someplace in Canaan. So I guess he adds a little bit of money here and there to the problem. And in that way, the story is concluded happily. Now the Mefarshim are generally bothered by two matters. I mean, there are two things that tend to be annoying. One, of course, is, you know, a prosaic kind of story. One always wonders how inefficient the Torah can be and still be the Torah. I mean, you read Pasuk after Pasuk after Pasuk, and you know, and the first time you read it, first time you ever learn the Parsha, I guess it's kind of a good story, you know. But the 32nd time, 33rd time, the 34th time, one might begin to wonder why the Torah thought that all of this information about Eliezer's competence as a shadchan was so important. That's on a general level. We'll look in a minute at the psukim themselves. You know, there are a lot of psukim. This story takes up 50 psukim, more. In Perek Kav Dalet, more than 50 psukim. There's another problem. And this problem is more specific to the way the Torah works. Not only is there a plethora of psukim, but if you look carefully at the psukim, you'll see that many of them are simply repeats, one of the other. First, Avraham Avinu calls Eliezer and says to him, listen, Eliezer, this is what you've got to do. This is where you've got to go. A, B, C, D, E, right? Whole story. And then Eliezer, when he comes to Bisuel, when he comes to the house of Rivka, he says, well, I'm going to tell you the story. And he goes and he tells the story over again in a manner extremely similar to the way that it was told the first time around. Now the Mefarshim find difficult, not only, as I said, with the great number of psukim in the parasha, but with the fact that many of them repeat one another. So one of the things that people noticed, and this kind of method of interpretation was summarized by the Abarbanel in his long comment to this particular parsha, is the Abarbanel said, he looked at the parsha, and he said, well, if you look carefully at the way the parsha is presented the first time around, and the way the parasha is presented the second time around, you'll see that they're not exactly the same. For example, when Avraham Avinu speaks to Eliezer, Pasuk 4, Pasuk Dalet, Avraham Avinu says to Eliezer, and there's a whole list, the Abarbanel made a list of 10 such instances, but we will suffice to make note of two or three, you can all fill in the rest on your own. Avraham Avinu says to Eliezer, Ki el artzi ve'el moladeti telech. Ve'akach le'isho livni li'yitzchak. Go to my land and to the place I was born. Right? To my birthplace. But when Eliezer tells the story, you look in Pasuk Lamed Chet 38, Eliezer says, Vayoma, I'm in the wrong parak here. Im lo el beis avi telech ve'el mishpachti ve'lakachta isha livni. Go to the house of my father and to the place of my family. So Eliezer changes it. Avram Avinu said, Arzi and Moladati, my land, my birthplace. Eliezer says, El Beit Avi, to the house of my father, and to my family place. Right? That's what he said. Another instance, you look back at Pasuk Zion, Pasuk 7. Hashem Elokei Hashamayim Asher Lokachani Mibeit Avi Uve'eretz Moladeti, God who has dominion over the heavens, Asher Lokachani Mibeit Avi, who took me out from the house of my father, Uve'eretz Moladeti, from the land that I was born in, Vasher Diberli, etc., etc. Who Yishlach Malach Olef Anecha? Right, he will send his angel. Avraham Avinu is telling Eliezer that you will be protected, just as God protected me when he brought me to Eretz Canaan. God will protect you going back on this mission to return with a wife for Yitzchak. Alright, that's very nice. What does Eliezer say in Pasuk 40 when he quotes this, when he repeats this statement? Vayomer, right? Hashem asher yishalachti lefonav. Hashem asher yishalachti lefonav. God, before whom I walked. Whereas Avraham Avinu said, asher likochani mi beis avi, God who took me from the house of my father. Eliezer says, God, before whom I walked. Change. If you look, for example, at Pasuk 14, Avraham Avinu says to Eliezer, Eliezer says, Vayan Narasha Omar Lehatino Kadech Veshteva, much to say, Begam Gimalecha Ashke. Osoha chaktolav the holy Yitzchak uvaidaki osiso chesed im adoni. Eliezer makes up a kind of a, I don't know what to call it, kind of a test. He says, how will I know, he thinks to himself, who the girl that Yitzchak is supposed to marry is? He says, we'll do this. The girl that comes and I will say to her, put down your kad. What's a kad? Bava Kama. You can't get away from Bava Kama, wherever you look. It says, take your jug off of your shoulder, put it down, and I'll drink. And she says, drink, and I will also give drink to the camels. That is proof. This is a proof for Yitzchak, and I will know, I Eliezer, kiasita chesed, that this is an act of loving kindness. This is an act of loving kindness. What does Eliezer say when he has to repeat the story? Pasuk 44. V'amroi lai gam atasha say, v'gam gegam malecha eshov ia isho asher achia Hashem levet adoni. And if she says to me, you drink, and the camel should drink, then I'll know that it's the right woman. What's missing? What's missing from the Eliezer version of his own story? Chesed. No chesed. The Abarbanel listed 10 major distinctions between story one and story two. That means the story as it happened. Avram spoke to Eliezer. Eliezer went on his way. Eliezer came to the well. Eliezer decided to make up this little test. Right? That's story one. Story two. They ask Eliezer, who are you? What are you doing? He tells this whole story over. The Abarbanel, in his commentary to the Chumash, lists what he calls 10 major distinctions between story one and story two. 10 major distinctions. And he tries to explain these distinctions generally in the following way. He says, well, if you look carefully, you'll see that story one is more spiritual, is more religious, is more in-house. You know, if you're an Avram Avinu, I would say, I want to say groupie, but if you're an Avram Avinu follower, so you can use these kind of words, like God took me, you know, El Artsi, El Moladati, right? But you can't say that. You can't, like, Moladati means it's the place I was born in, but not the place where I'm actually living in. If you're in-house, you can say lekochani mi beis avi, as though to say, I had to step up. I'm moving up in the world when I went from Canaan to, from Ur Kasdim to Canaan. When I'm talking to the people in Ur Kasdim, so I don't want to say that. If I talk about chesed, I say, oh, God does chesed for me. I don't want to sort of intimate that I'm a centrally located in the chesed division of the Rebbeinu Shlomo. I don't want to say that. I don't say, you know, say to the people over there, you know, we've got this chesed sewed up somehow. You don't want to say things like, so the Abarbanel gives what it seemed to me in learning the Abarbanel to be plausible rationale for some of the changes between story one and story two, but not, certainly not, a plausible rationale for their existence. But you have to understand that these are two different questions. If you avoid the major question and say, well, why is the story there, b'chalal? Why is the story, if you avoid that question and you say, well, let's look at the details of the story, and let's see if I somehow can find a reason for the change. So you can sort of like hypnotize yourself out of the major issue. And the major issue is, why is the story in the Torah? I mean, what possible lesson is there to be learned from the fact that the story is in the Torah? This problem, by the way, is not a problem that I have invented. Because if you look in this parasha on the commentary of the Radak, you will see that the Radak makes a blanket statement about all of these problems and says there is no importance to any of these changes. He goes, what does the Radak mean? What does the Radak mean? He says, well, I mean, what do you think that Eliezer, Avram Avinu's servant, was blessed with a photographic memory? I mean, you talk. I mean, Adarabba. That's what the Radak said. Even people say this about the Aseres Dibros, but I don't want to get back involved with that. You know, there's a difference between, there are many differences between Aseres Dibros and Shmos. Many of them very small. Some of them more significant. The Aseres Dibros in the Book of Devorah. Right? There are differences. So the Radak says, I just want to make sure that you know that. The Radak says about Eliezer. The Radak says about Eliezer, well, what do you expect it to be exactly the same? That's just what you don't expect. You don't want to say Abertel, you want to say, oh, Eliezer said chesed here and he didn't say chesed there. So good. You know, say whatever kind of drusha you want to say. The Radak doesn't mind. If you want to say that it's unreasonable that there should be changes, that we're surprised
that there are small changes. We can't understand that there isn't an absolute imaging in one story of the other story. The doc says no. I mean, after all, we're talking about a man who came and told the story as he remembered it, highlighting all the important things. And even though the doc doesn't say it, but we could say, well, it could be like it's pretty surprising that the Eliezer did as well as he did. After all, how many people remember as much as Eliezer remembered word for word? Because if you would do the opposite of what the Abarbanels did, and you would count up the number of words that were exactly the same, you got a lot of words. So it depends. That's what the Radak says. The Radak against the Abarbanel. It just depends how you look at it. What do you expect? Do you expect perfect rendition? Or do you expect, or are you surprised at near perfect rendition? That's the only question. But since we are not satisfied, or we find that we are not satisfied by the fact that the differences, by focusing in on the differences, we haven't really gotten hold of what's going on in this parsha. I just want the, somebody have a Rambam? I think my Rambam. Excuse me, I'll get my Rambam. Eliezer created this kind of little game. Right? He said, if a woman comes along and she says, I'll say to her, I want to drink. And the woman says, okay, you can drink and I'll feed you camels. Well, it's like, she's even better than I would have ever imagined. So that's a siman. That's a siman, right? We've all done that sometime or other, haven't we? Like, you know, you don't want to make a decision. You don't make a decision, you know, you say, oh, if the next three cars that go by are older than 1985, I'll cross the street. Everybody does that. Maybe not that particular. Maybe not that particular thing. The Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Yud Aleph. The Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Yud Aleph. Halacha Hei. The Rambam talks about the Issa of Menachesh and Kosem. With the Torah is quite clear about the fact that it's also for us to do certain kinds of magic. Now understand that the Issa does not reflect on the efficacy of this magic. Right? The Torah never said, don't do these things because they don't work. The Torah never said it. Quite the contrary. In the case of certain kinds of magic, there's clear evidence in the Torah that it does work. Right? You remember the story about the witch of Ein Dor, that Shaul HaMelech wanted very much to speak to Shmuel HaNavi. And the only problem was that Shmuel HaNavi was dead. So he tried this way and he tried that way. I mean, he knew that one could have a prophetic vision. Shaul HaMelech. And Shaul HaMelech tried to receive some kind of information from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but was unable to. And so he went to the witch in Ein Dor. This is one of the most tragic moments in Jewish history, because in the same parak which describes Shaul HaMelech going to see the witch of Ein Dor, also describes how at the end of his days Shaul HaMelech desperately trying to achieve some kind of level of
spirituality or to reestablish a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu after Shmuel had told him that he would lose his position as king, one of the things that Shaul HaMelech did was wipe out the witches in Eretz Yisrael, the Menachashim and the Kosmim. He personally directed the campaign against these people. And when that didn't help, and he was not able to achieve prophetic intervention, and he was not able to make any kind of spiritual contact with the Rebbe Shlomo, in other words, he was not able to do tshuva. So in desperation, he went, he found that there was a witch still at Ein Dor who had somehow escaped the Shaul HaMelech dragnet. And he went to her and asked her to raise Shmuel HaNavi from the dead. And at least the pshat in the parsha is that she did it. And the pshat in the parsha is that they had a conversation, Shaul HaMelech and Shmuel HaNavi, so that Shaul HaMelech is an example of a person who was unable to achieve through like kosher, reasonable spiritual direction what he was looking for, and somehow was able to achieve it manipulatively. So that there is no evidence, and there may be evidence to the contrary, that all of the Menachashim and the Kosmim that the Torah talks about are helpless or futile acts. Quite the contrary. There is evidence to indicate that it works. And that's why the Torah asks it. It's as though we talked about many times, but idolatry. Idolatry is not awesome because it has no spiritual content. Idolatry is also because it is a spiritual deviation. That's how the Torah understands it. Right? There's a difference between something that is meaningless and something that is determined to be deviations. It is the purpose of Am Yisrael in the world to establish the beachhead of the service of one God. And that's difficult, apparently. Because history has proven again and again that people who are spiritual or spiritually inclined naturally tend to look for a variety of religious experience, as somebody once wrote on the jacket of a book. But the Torah says that there's something better about, qualitatively, without explaining it necessarily, that the Hashem Echad component of Torah spirituality is that which we are charged to fulfill. But the Torah doesn't say, and it would be incorrect to surmise, that any kind of idolatrous act is in itself some sort of comical masquerade of religiosity. And sometimes we're inclined to think, like we say, well, look at those people over there, you know, in some place, primitive people. They are idolaters. But we have to remember that Am Yisrael, that the story of Yahushua and Shoftim and Shmuel, the books of Yahushua and Shoftim and Shmuel, are the stories of the idolatrous Jews. It's a story of how the Jewish people, having gone through the experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah, were unable to rid themselves of the scepter of idolatry. It was always there. No matter how hard they were punished, and no matter how difficult their life became, and no matter how much the oppression of the Moabites and the Midianites and the Philistines was at different times of the history, they always returned to the same state of affairs. And the same state of affairs was always idolatry. And idolatry was more options for religious development rather than an attempt to maintain the notion of Hashem Echad as the only kind of goal of the religious personality. There's always a difficulty. This difficulty continued until Churban Bayis Rishon, as you know, the Beis HaMikdash changed things, finally the Churban Beis HaMikdash changed it finally. Why that happened is a conversation for another time. So the Rambam quotes the Halach, and he says, Ein menachashim goldei kochovim, she'ne'emar lo tenachashim. You're not allowed to be menachesh. Menachesh. What does that mean? What's nachash? Those who say, Ho'il she'venoflo peti mipi or nofo makli miyodi, eini olech lemokom ploni hayom. Right? No, something happened. I'm holding on to something in my hand and it falls down. I say, whoop, bad sign. Right? The cat walks by, bad sign. I'm walking along and somebody puts a ladder over my head, bad sign. Bad sign. In other words, I kind of arbitrarily, I make up, I decide that God is giving me hints in all kinds of ways. So if you say that, I'm not going to go there. Because if I go there, it's going to be bad for me. You know about horoscopes? You read your horoscopes? You don't read your horoscopes. Good. I mean, it's probably mamish awesome. I mean, I don't know if producing a horoscope is awesome, because I think it just like comes out of a computer program or something. But like looking at it and taking it seriously sounds like pretty awesome to me. Because that's what it is. That's the menachesh. If you say something, there's like this irrelevant factor, and you say, based on that irrelevant, I'll make a decision about how I'm going to live my life. Or, since this fox walked on one side, on my right side, I won't go out of my house today. Because if I leave, then I'm going to meet a ramai. I'm going to meet a deceitful fellow who's going to do me in. And those people who listen to the birds chattering, and they say, it'll be this way or that way, or I better do this and not do that, you know, like all those days, this day is good for getting married, or this day is good for investment, or this day is good for, you know, all of that is all menachesh. And it brings other examples. The chen ha-meisim simonim latzma. He says, like, first I gave you examples of things that are more or less like known in the community. The community, they say if a black cat walks by, so no good, right? That's something in the world. But there's another kind of menachesh. He says, the other kind of menachesh is im yara li kach v'kach esed v'aplon. If something happens to me, like if I'm walking across the street, I close my eyes and cross the street and I don't get killed, then I'll do it. If I do get killed, I won't do it. Not such a good example. But you see, the Rambam says you don't have to do that. You don't have to say, if this happens, then I'll do this, and if it doesn't, I won't do that. And who does he bring as the example of what it is you're not supposed to do? None other than Eliezer Eved Avraham. None other. Eliezer, okay. Not only that, if you do it, then you get Malchus. You say, Baruch Hashem, Eliezer, he was a guard, I guess. But Eliezer is brought as the example, according to the Rambam, of doing a bona fide Isser D'oraisa. Right? In other words, Eliezer did not go down in history in the Rambam's book as being the greatest of all Shadchanim. No. Nor did he even go down in history in the book that the Rambam wrote as having a photographic memory. Eliezer went down in history as being a real Over Aveir. It's a lot of Aveirs in Aveir Zohar, right? A whole book full of Aveirs in Aveir Zohar. And we don't have any examples of them. Specific. We can't say Ploni, he did that Aveir, that specific Aveir. Right, we know Am Yisrael did Avodah Zorah. But Eliezer, we've got it. We must have him. He, Eliezer, did Avodah Zorah. Where did he do Avodah Zorah? In this wonderful story about the Shidduch. So, in this wonderful story about the Shidduch, which has so many psukim in it, and the psukim don't really seem to get anywhere, but they repeat each other again and again. The only tangible piece of information that I get that is of halachic significance is that in the middle of all this, Eliezer is being over and over according to the Rambam. According to the Rambam.
Now, of course, it's not so pashut. It's not true that everybody agrees with the Rambam. But it is true that it's not clear. Let me just remind you of the Ravid. I remind you what the Ravid says. The Ravid, in his comment on the Rambam, attacks violently. And he says, no, this is a terrible mistake. It's certainly permitted. He says, how could the Rambam think this about Tzaddikim? Right? Tzaddikim, who is he talking about? Eliezer. How does he know Eliezer is a Tzaddik? Come on, Eliezer, Eved, Avram, the Yonasan ben Shaul, right? Yonasan, the son of Shaul, who also did something like this in the war with the Plishtim, when he said to his boy, no, his nar, if they say Alu va'alinu, v'zeru ha'os, if they say let's go, so we'll go up against them. The Ravid ends by saying, if they were alive, Eliezer and Yonasan, they would attack him with balls of fire. Him meaning the Rambam. In the Rambam, it was like there's an attitudinal problem that the Ravid thinks that the Rambam has. The Rambam really didn't like any of this stuff, right? You know, the Rambam went to university, was a doctor, you know, he's that kind of skeptical personality. He didn't go for this mumbo jumbo. So even if he found it in Eliezer, he also didn't like it. But it's really, really, the Tosfos in Chulin asked the question. The Gemara says that Eliezer's talking an example of Nachash. So the Tosfos says, "Im tomar Eliezer heyach nichesh." How could it be that Eliezer did nichesh? Because we know that even a Ben Noach is forbidden from doing these things. Answer: Hatana sova shelo nasa la tzmidim ashigidu la basmihi. Avagad dichsi vaykacha ish nezem zahav. So Tosfos says as follows. Even though it looks like in the Torah, what does it look like? That Eliezer is acting based on the Nachash, based on this mumbo jumbo. What does Eliezer say? If the girl comes and I say to her, give me water, and then she says to me, take the water and let me feed your camels, then I know Eliezer says that she's the right girl, right? And even though in the Torah it says that she came, and he said, give me water, and she said, take some water, let me give water to your camels. And then what did Eliezer do? What did Eliezer do? He said, he took out all the presents that he brought, and he gave it to her, to this girl. He gave it to her right away. And then he said to her, oh, by the way, what's your name? Which seems to indicate that Eliezer had a profound respect for the fact that she had acted in the way that he had contrived, right? That was Eliezer's position. So how can you say that Eliezer was not Menachesh? How can you say that? What other means to say that? So Tosfos is really in trouble. I mean, you see from the answer of Tosfos that there's a difficulty here. And what's the difficulty? What is the difficulty? That it looks like Nachash, 100% gilt-edged Nachash. So what is Tosfos' answer? Ein mukta muhavatera. What does ein mukta muhavatera mean? What does ein mukta muhavatera? It's a very difficult question. But in this context, what does it seem to mean, in this particular context, that even though the story in the Torah is told, first he made the condition, then she came and fulfilled the condition, then he bestowed upon her the gifts, then he asked her what her name is, right? That's how the story is told in the Torah. What really happened was, first he made the condition, then she fulfilled the condition, then he asked her what her name is, and then he gave her the gifts, right? That's what Tosfos says. So if you'll ask, so why did the Torah write it backwards, only to confuse us, right? So there's no answer.
No, he said, but the Tosfos uses arbitrarily, b'yad rama, in a kind of a very cavalier fashion, this principle of a mukdam mukhav Torah, that in the Torah things are not necessarily written in their chronological order, not necessarily, to get himself out of what he considers to be a very profound hole. Again, Balakam. You see, Tosfos could have said, Tosfos said, all right, no. So Eliezer did something wrong, like the Rambam did. But Tosfos said, no, I don't want to say that Eliezer did something wrong, because my understanding of the parasha is that Eliezer is representing the forces of good and not the forces of evil. If Eliezer was an Ovid Avodah Zorah, what sense does it make to think that Avram Avinu would have sent him? What sense does it make to say that he would have been so successful? What sense does it make to say, does it make if we say that Eliezer was able to represent the future of Jewish history as a shatchin and to be an idolater? So Tosfos says this is not possible. So the understanding of Tosfos is that when you know what is not possible, then everything gives, right? Then moving around the psukim even is a reasonable act of interpretation. It's a reasonable act of interpretation. The Rambam, however, says, you call it like you see it. Obviously, Eliezer went to be a shatchin because he was the best candidate, but he was not the best man. He was not the best man. He was also enthralled with idolatry, and we are not surprised that Eliezer, I mean, the Rambam doesn't say this, but if we wanted to defend the position of the Rambam, we could say that there is no indication that Eliezer was a great tzaddik. Quite the contrary, Eliezer disappears from the scene of history, and whether he was a tzaddik or a rasha is not resolved. But you see from the words of the Rishonim that there is an in-principle question here. And that question is, who is it that Avram Avinu sent to do this particular task? I want to ask you, there's another question that is asked. Just to change the subject a bit. At the end of the parasha of Vayera, there is this funny psukim, you know. I remember when I was a kid, I used to I'm not always happy about thinking that I've left that category, but when I was younger, so I used to lane. And you know, laning on Rosh Hashanah, of course, was a big deal. And I used to prepare a lot, even though it's not such a, the parasha not so long, it wasn't so hard, but it was the ma'amat. You know, being shul, Rosh Hashanah, with all these people having to lay. It was like very serious, but I always knew. When I came to like the end of Vayera, it was like a breeze. Like you had these psukim, as utz b'chorov, as buz achiv, as k'mu'el avira. Like there are no trucks. You just have to learn how to say the words. And so you have these names, utz and buz and kesed, as chazov, as pildosh, as yidlof, as besuah. And of course, we are like incessantly asking the same kind of question all the time. Who wants to know exactly who the children of Nahor through Milcah are? I mean, do you know anybody who named their children Utz or Buz? It would be like, are you twins? Utz and Buz. Or Kesed and Chazov. Pildosh and Yidlof. I mean, it's not even the Alufa Esau. You remember that at the end of the book of Bereishis, Lamed Zion, there's a very long genealogy about Esau. And so, we have the same problem. So why are all these names mentioned? So the Rambam and the Baruch Nebuchim, the famous Pshat, the famous interpretation, says, well, you need all these names because we want to know about Amalek. It's important for us, because it's a mitzvah about Amalek, to recognize who the Amalekites are. Somebody will come and they'll say, you say, hello, there, are you an Amalekite? He'll say, no, not me. So you're going to say, well, who's your father? of who you're related to, right? So eventually we can like pull it together and catch him if he's trying to fool us. That's what the Rambam said. But when it comes to the children of Nochal and Besuev and Milcah, we're not interested in that. So the question is, why is it in the Torah? Why is it in the Torah? So listen to Rashi. Acharei advarim ha'elu, after Akedas Yitzchak, right? After Akedas Yitzchak, the beginning of the Jewish history begins after Jewish history, after Akedas Yitzchak. Right? I won't expand on that. But the beginning of Jewish history begins because after Akedas Yitzchak, there is a father and a son. And the father and the son are each have a schut kiyum as Jews. Each of them has the right to life as a Jew. The first time in history that this happened. And this is the major change that was effected as a result of Akedas Yitzchak. Rashi says, when Avraham Avinu came back from Har Moriah, he was sort of like thinking, he was concerned. And he says, I have to marry off my son. I mean, who am I going to marry him to? I mean, you know, look at these people around here in Canaan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham Avinu, Shenoldo Rivka Bazugo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Avraham Avinu, Rivka has been born. Rivka. Who's Rivka? So you have to know, who is Rivka? You look right here. Oh, Bisuel. Bisuel. He is the son of Nochor. His mother is Milcah. His daughter is Rivka. So Rashi says, you know why this parasha is in the Torah? You know what the parasha is doing here in the Torah? It's not stam. It's not introductory. It's not that which comes before that which comes after. No. HaKadosh Baruch Hu went to Avraham Avinu and said, no, where am I going to find a shidduch for my Yitzchakel? Right? Who may have been, you know, any age from 3 to 40 at that particular moment. He says, where am I going to find a shidduch for this young man, this fine, wonderful young man? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, no, no problem. She was born already. She just born, or she was born a long time ago, but she's there. This is her name. Rivka Bas Besuel. That's her name. Which Besuel? You know, you remember when you left Ur Kasdim, remember Nochor? He had a son. And he had a daughter. That's the girl. So along comes Avraham Avinu. So what should Avraham Avinu do? Avraham Avinu, armed with this information, and this is not a medrash exactly. It's not, you know, there are medrashim that tell you things that are not in the Torah. But this medrash is not telling you something that's not in the Torah. What does the medrash say? That which is in the Torah. You know why it's in the Torah? Right here? Right in Akedas Yitzchak? Because that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu said to Avraham Avinu, Rivka, right? Passport number, da 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 da. And she lives on that street. And, you know, that's it. It's all over. No problem. Just send a ticket. Send a ticket. So I'm a minister. Ticket! I'll do better than a ticket. I'll send Eliezer. I'll send donkeys. I'll send camels. I'll send presents. I'm going to really make it nice. You know, I could go. I could write a telegram, fax to the Suel. And say, send Rivka. So God said, send Rivka. So no, I'm a nice guy. Why would I do that? I'll do it in the polite way. I'll send Eliezer, have a little conversation, and it'll bring her back. I will pay money. Everybody will be happy. Right? That's what it says in Rashi. So what does Avraham Avinu do? Avraham Avinu takes poor Eliezer and says, Eliezer, it's up to you. The future of the Jewish people is up to you. We have to daven, we have to work, we have to go, we have to think through thoughts, we have to... And God will help you. Go, Eliezer. Here's poor Eliezer. He's got the burden of the entire Jewish people, the future of the Jewish people, on his back. Certainly he has the burden of Avraham Avinu on his back. He comes to the place that Avraham Avinu said he doesn't know why he went, and he's looking for a girl, and he has no way to find out. So what does he do, Nebuch? He makes up a sign. I mean, what could he do? I mean, what, he didn't have a shidduch detector. You know, I mean, he's nothing for him to do, so he makes up a sign. Because he made up a sign, the Rambam clobbers him. Right? So what's going on? Why couldn't Avraham Avinu say to Eliezer, Eliezer, this is her name, this is her address, I know the family very well, you know, I don't like them, I do like them, this is what you should do, you know, just go there, pay them off, and everything will be alright. So no, there's Eliezer on a mission. Who's Eliezer? What does he need missions for? What mission is so important that Avraham Avinu has to keep it a secret from Eliezer, and furthermore produce this anomalous situation where Eliezer's parasha duplicates itself, right? It's got so much of it in the Torah, and also the fact that Eliezer gets himself into trouble, at least with some of the Rishonim, with the Rambam, about Nichush. Now there's a famous statement in Rashi, which I would like to remind you of. There are two more references that I would like to mention. One is in our parasha, in the Rashi, the Pasuk Mem Beis, where Rashi addresses the question. Rashi addresses the question of all these psukim and all these words and all the discussion by Eliezer. And Rashi addresses the question. So Rashi quotes a medrash, and the medrash appears in different places in different ways. It appears in the Medrash Rabbah differently than Rashi quotes it. It appears in a medrash, in a book of medrash called the Yalkut Ruveni, in the way that Rashi quotes it. But the general idea in the medrash appears in several places. It's not quite at the beginning of Rashi. It's a line into Rashi. Omar Rav Acha. What did Rav Acha say? Yofesi chosom shel avdei ovos livnei hamokov mitarosom shel bonim. Here's a good one. Right, if you want something to think about over the weekend. Omar Rav Acha, a medrash. Rav Acha says, the Torah, well, lifnei hamokov, HaKadosh Baruch enjoys. And I guess everybody in yeshiva was tired or something, right? So Akha figures that it's time to say something dramatic, you know, that no one will be able to sleep through. So Rav Akha says, well, obviously, God likes it more when the slaves of the Ovos talk than when the children learn Torah. How come? All right, what's the fruit? Sharei Parsha Shel Eliezer Kfuva Batura. Says, look at the conversation of Eliezer. It's written twice in the Torah. Not once, but twice. The same thing. Two times. V'harbei Gufei Torah Lo Nitnu Ela Birmiza. And we know that there are a lot of Gufei Torah, right? Hilchos Shabbos, for example. It's in the Torah someplace, Hilchos Shabbos? I mean, you have to mamash, be a detective, to find a halacha of Shabbos. Not the mention of Shabbos, but a halacha of Shabbos. Basenah Shabbos, 150 daf, right? 150 daf, jam-packed with halachas. Shulchan Aruch, the whole chelik on Shulchan Shabbos, right? Chelik Beis, all Shabbos. Shabbos is like a weighty topic. Where is it in the Torah? Absent. Absent. You think we could have used a little space for the Shabbos and sort of erase a little of Eliezer? No. Omar Rav Acha, obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to make a decision about what to put in the Torah. So what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu decide? Better Eliezer recounting the tales of Eliezer you know, then learning a few halachas is never Shabbos. Not so yeshivish, you might say. Right? Not so yeshivish. That's what Rashi said. And with this statement, Rashi is pleased. Rashi says, I've fulfilled my obligation to explain to you what is going on in this parsha. Right? What's the explanation? HaKadosh Baruch Hu likes it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu likes it. There's one other reference. What other reference that it's interesting, curiosity. Well, and not that it won't, it doesn't have anything to do with what we're talking about, but it's a curiosity nonetheless, because today, in Sios Yisharim, we heard about the Chamor of Rav Pinchas Ben Yair. Right? Remember the Chamor of Pinchas Ben Yair? That the Chamor of Pinchas Ben Yair also did mitzvahs. Right? And refrained from doing avers. Not only was Rabbi Schrader said that not only was Pinchas Ben Yair considered to be a very righteous personality, but even the Chamor of Pinchas Ben Yair was considered to be very righteous. So, there's a medrash called Ovos de Rabbi Nosson, which is the parallel to Pirkei Ovos, in which the another variation of this idea is found. In the Ovos de Rabbi Nosson, it says, "Kishem she'atzadikim arishonim ayu chasidim." This is just as the righteous in the beginning of history were all tzaddikim. It means the Avos, right? Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Kach behemtam ayu chasidos. In a like fashion, their behemos were also very righteous. Omru gemalav shel Avram Avinu. Lo nichnesu lebayis sheyesh ba'avodazor. Says the camels of Avraham Avinu would not go into a house that was idolatrous. Shenema, v'anochi v'nisi abayis u'makom ligmalim. Right? Who says that? Well, when they all come back, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Perkov Dalit, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, right? By Ravor, so she comes back to convince him, to convince Eliezer to come home with her, Rivka, right? So she says, Anochi Pinisi Habayis Umokom Lagmanu. I have emptied out the house and made room for the camels. Right? In those days, everybody's very friendly. People, camels, all went together. So the Medrash says, Anochi Pinisi Abayis. What do you mean? What did she empty out? What did you have to tell Eliezer that she emptied out the house? It would be sufficient to say, I made room for the camels. Right? What did she empty out? Pinisi Abayis Mitrafim. I emptied out the house from traffic. Uma Talmud Lomar Mokom Legmalim. Why does it say I made place for the camels? Milame Chilo Nifnasu Lebes Lovon Harami Achep Ponu Koravorazorim Ibnei. From this you learn that the camels of Avraham Avinu were not prepared to go into the house of Avraham Avinu until she, Rivka, took out all of the idols. So according to this Medrash, we end up with a little bit of doubt about Eliezer, right? We don't know about him, but we're confident about the camel. Now, in order to sort of tie together all the things that we've talked about, although it's not my necessary intention to answer questions, but a little bit, I mean, I'll give you a direction. I want to remind you, just briefly, because the hour is not early, I want to remind you of the fact that another one of the Ovos had a little bit of difficulty with the shift. Right? That was Yaakov Avinu. And you remember that Yaakov Avinu had all kinds of difficulties. First, he wanted to marry this daughter, and he married that daughter. Then finally married that daughter. Right? But he lived in a situation out there outside of Eretz Yisrael, which was not not a good one. And when he suddenly found himself, when he found himself ready to leave, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to leave, he was penniless. I mean, he couldn't leave. In those days, the logistics of doing anything meant you had to have animals and a retinue and all kinds of food to go from where he was to come back to Eretz Yisrael. Not an easy thing, so he needed money. So Yaakov Avinu did something. The Rambam doesn't mention it. The Gemara doesn't mention it. But something that looked like something like you shouldn't do. What did Yaakov Avinu do? He made a deal. Made a deal with Lot. And the deal was like Lavan figured he couldn't lose. I can't lose, you know. Why not? You know, give him a chance. The deal was that Yaakov Avinu said, all of the any calves or sheep born in the flock that are strange looking, like they're spotted and speckled and striped, you know, apparently a very unlikely event, I get them. That's my pay for all the years that I work. I take them away with me. And Lavan said, I was afraid you would ask me for money. This is a deal. Never happens. They're never speckled and spotted and striped sheep. Never happens. So Yaakov Avinu said, it's a deal. I'm willing to make this deal. So Lavan is happy. He knew that. He knew that Yaakov was a fool. Now he's sure that Yaakov is a fool. So what did Yaakov Avinu do? He took these staffs and he peeled away the bark, right, a part of the staffs. So there was like striped, the bark looked like striped sticks. And he took these sticks when the sheep were in heat, and he like held them around and put them there, you know, and the sheep like looked at these sticks, and all the sheep that were born were in fact of this variety. I mean, that's what he did. That's what Yaakov Avinu, you know, Yaakov Avinu, like what do we think? Yaakov Avinu, why is he go daven? He's going to shtibble. And tell the Rebbeinu Shloimeh, you know, pull out his heart and say, I need a few, I made this deal. I mean, maybe I shouldn't have done it. It was a stupid deal. You know, as our people always say about their poor business deals, right? You have a shul and you say, Rebbeinu Shloimeh, I'm here. This is what it took to get me here. A bad deal. You know, the market is collapsing and I'm still like, you know, you got to say, just save me. Everybody else, they really deserve it. I just want to pull out my investment. I want all the stocks to go down and my stock to go up there. So I'm a Avinu. So you think that that's what Yaakov Avinu would do. He would go to the Benjamin and say, Rativin. You know, the Baditchavin is saying, Rativin, help me, save me. What I did to myself. No. Yaakov Avinu goes and he does this trick. And it works. And it works. So there's like an overt case. There's an overt case of a trick in Teva, in nature, by Yaakov Avinu. Whereas by Eliezer, we agree that it's not at all clear. The Machlekes, the Rambam, the Raivin, there were other Rishonim who disagree with the Rambam. The Rambam is a Das Yochid, even though he's quoting a Gemara. The Rambam is quoting a Gemara. Now what happened after Yaakov Avinu did all of that? It wasn't good, right? We're just trying to remind ourselves. It wasn't perfectly good. Yaakov Avinu left. He went to flocks, with the flocks of these speckled and spotted and striped sheep, but Lavan came chasing after him and accused him, and he was in danger. It was like there was some kind of... It was interesting. It was interesting that Eliezer came. And he said, I'm here, representing Avraham Avinu. I'm taking this girl. She'll come with me. And they let him go. And they didn't cause any problem. Yaakov, with his real wives, who he earned through hard work, with the sheep and the flocks that he also earned, because it was a deal out of the open, he has difficulty in leaving. He has difficulty in separating himself. And really, the Mitzvah would say that you have the same problem, interestingly enough, in Yetzias Mitzrayim, that the miracles the miracles don't seem to have a profound effect on the Egyptians. Even Makkos B'chorot, right? After all the firstborn are dying in Egypt, the Egyptians remain unaffected. Unaffected, they come charging out after the Jewish people and try to stop them even after they've left Israel. We asked what the point was. What's the point of the story? Just as... Well, first let me tell you the point of the story. Let's look through a few pesukim. Pasuk Gimel. Hashpiyacha b'Hashem Elokei Hashamayim Elokei Haaretz. Swear in the name of God of heaven and earth that you will not take a woman mibenos haknani asher anochi yeshev b'kirbo. Again we say Avraham Avinu knew. But what did Avraham Avinu want? Hashpiyacha. He wanted this act to be done as an act of faith in God. Who is going to perform the act of faith in God? Eliezer. Pasuk 7. Zion. Hashem Elokei Hashamayim. He's going to do it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will show us. Hu Yishlach Malacho Lefanecha. He will send an angel before you and you will take a woman from there. Pasuk Yud Beis 12. Vayomer Hashem Elokei Adoni Avraham Hakreino Lefanai Hayom Vasei Chesedim Adoni Avraham. Again, another step by Eliezer, placing himself entirely within Hashkacha, within the divine control. That's what happens. Pasuk 21, Pasuk of Aleph. Va'ish Mishtoelo. This man is waiting to find a woman. Macharish lo das hayatzliach Hashem darko imla, and he wants to know whether God is directing him, whether life is being directed by God in every step of the way. And finally, well, not finally, but if you look in Pasuk 26 and 27, the tefillah of Eliezer, Vayomer Baruch Hashem. Again, thanksgiving to God for that which has taken place. 26 and 27. Now look at the end of the story. 50. Pasuk Nun. Vayan, after all the conversation and all the talk and love, and Eliezer tells the story again, and he talks about everything that Avram told him and everything that happened to him, and it happens again. Vayom vayar lobon uvisue vayemru mehashem yotso hadavar, and they said that this all comes from HaKadosh Baruch lo nuchal daber elecha ra'uto. In other words, Lobon was convinced that it was the hand of God. It was the hand of God in the process of history that was making what was making all of this possible. And again in Pasuk Nunvav 56, Vayomer Aleim Al Tacharosi. Eliezer says, Al Tacharosi Vashem Etzliach Darki Shalchuni Ve'El Chola Adoni. So the pshat in the story is, and the difference between the story of Eliezer and the story of Yaakov. And perhaps the pshat in the Rambam is as follows. Avraham Avinu knew exactly who the girl who was going to be Yitzchak's wife was to be. But Avraham Avinu also knew who the father of the girl who was going to be the wife of Yitzchak was. And the issue in the entire process that we are witnessing is not Rivka, but it's rather Pesuah. It's rather Rivka's father, because you know that the problem of father and son was a problem that concerned Avraham Avinu a lot. Avraham Avinu was concerned, according to the Medrash, that his father Terach was, whoever he was.
You know that the Medrash is concerned to tell us that it seems that Avram, that Terach was Chozer B'Tshuva before he died. Yes? You remember perhaps the Ramban at the end of Lech Lecha that talks about how the Bonim, the children, saved the father sometime, that Avram Avinu was able to save his father. That Avram Avinu, even though in some ways, the Maharal says, had no father, right? He was Avram. His name was changed to Avraham. Avraham is a new personality. He's like a ger, someone who's mitgayer, he doesn't have a father. Avram Avinu was like that. Nevertheless, Avram Avinu was concerned about the father, because you can't say that there's no input. You can't say that the breach, that the father has no effect on the child. So Avram Avinu was concerned. Avram Avinu was concerned about Bisuel. And he wanted Bisuel to understand, at least to understand, that Avram Avinu, the family of Avram Avinu, was the family that represented a special closeness to God's intervention in history. And how could he explain it to him? Could he go to Bisuel and say, listen, God told me that your daughter is the one? So Bisuel will say, what does it matter to me whether God told you or not? Let's talk about a shidduch. How much money are you giving? What am I going to get? How is it going to work out? That shidduch talk. The shidduch talk. Why not? Bisuel has no reason to be opposed to his daughter marrying Avram Avinu if it's a good deal. So everybody heard that Avram Avinu is very rich. Everybody knows that Avram Avinu is very important. Everybody knows that Avram Avinu is a very significant personality, Bolam Hazeh. So Bisuel would be certainly willing, ready, a relative even, to marry off his daughter to Yitzchak, Madu alone. But Avram Avinu wanted Yitzchak, he wanted Bisuel to be a participant in the notion that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is determining history and that Rivka is playing a role and that marrying Yitzchak is not like marrying anybody else, because it's important that the father of the girl be able to react to that kind of reality in a religious manner. And so, Avram Avinu contrived this plan, knowing full well how it would work out. Avram Avinu contrived this plan to make Bisuel understand what it means to say that the Shidduch is min ha-shamayim. What does it mean to say that it's necessary, it must be, that the future of the world depends on this? And the way it was done was by bringing to Bisuel the word of divine intervention in the daily activities of Eliezer. Eliezer, not suspect of being a religious fanatic. He was not Avram Avinu by any means. And so Avram Avinu, Eliezer presented himself as being in the throes of divine concern. That's why Eliezer said, this is why when I was sent, and this was my charge, and I had no information, and I made a sign, and it came true, and now I'm here, and you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with me. And finally, at the end of the parasha, he agrees. Bisuel agrees. So that one thing is clear. One thing is clear. What is clear is that Bisuel did not perceive what had happened to Eliezer at the well as being nachash or lachash. You following? In other words, Eliezer, Bisuel himself, when Eliezer told him, I made up the sign. Right, remember the sign? I said, the girl comes, she does this, and does that. Then I know it's the girl. Bisuel did not perceive? That he was doing it as an instance of nachash, of lachash. Why not? Because in every case, Yaakov Avinu l'mashal, or Yetzias Mitzrayim, when the idolaters are able to understand what's going on in idolatrous terms, they do so. In other words, when Laban, why did Laban chase after Yaakov? I mean, after all, Yaakov, if he proved himself so capable, he had these sticks and staffs and everything worked out the way he said. So how come Laban wasn't a little afraid? A man who can, like, create biology? I mean, how do you chase after him? awe. Because you see, I'm not afraid of what I understand. You know, Foreman wasn't afraid. He went into the ring, right? You know, sometimes you may get bashed in the head. But you're not afraid because you know what it is. When do you start getting afraid? When you don't know. You don't know. So Yaakov Avinu said to Lavan, you know what I am? I'm sticks and I make little signs and I do this kind of thing and that kind of thing. Lavan said, psst, it's pretty good. But Paro said, you know, said to Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, you can really do that?
I can rise.
It's pretty good. And we don't have anybody who can do that. And we have guys who turn sticks into snakes. We know guys like that. We might even have a guy who can make like the sink, you know, water bloody. We have a guy like that. But Manish, like, you know, lice all over the place. We haven't got a guy like that. But the protestation of Paro was to the annoyance. Paro came to Aaron Rabbeinu and said, to Moshe Rabbeinu and said, stop it. I can't stand it. He didn't say, I believe you. Because it was in his world. In his world. We have guys who can make one frog into two frogs. That's it. That's all we've got. You can make millions of frogs. But I see it. You know, I see it. That if we work at it, we can also maybe make millions of frogs. So Lavan was given the wrong message, perhaps, because Yaakov Avinu presented himself in a way that Lavan could misunderstand. But Yitzchak Eliezer, apparently, irrespective of the Pshat, Eliezer represented himself to Besuel in a way that Besuel could not misunderstand. What did Eliezer say? I am here because God took me and brought me here. Not because of a trick. That was a trick. No tricks. No tricks at all. And somehow Eliezer and Besuel believed that. He believed that. And he didn't see the trick as a trick. And because Besuel didn't see the trick as a trick, it's a machlekes. Because if you extract the trick from the parasha, you take it out of the parasha, and just look at the pasuk, which is the Gemara says, and the Rambam passes by Locha. If you just look at the pasuk by itself, you say, oh, it's a trick. But if you look at the pasuk in wider context, you say, ah, but it's not a trick. Because if it were a trick, then Besuel would have understood it that way. And he'd say, who are you? You're like me. We're the same. So give me more money. Give me more presents. Give me more time. And he would have made trouble for him, just like Lavan made trouble for Yaakov. Besuel would have made trouble for Eliezer. But Eliezer at least presented himself to Besuel as a man without tricks, as a man who only has divine direction. Only has divine direction. So the machlokes between the Rambam and the Ravid, for example, is just that. The Rambam says, if you look at the pasuk, it's an example of Nachash. And the Ravid says, but look at the parsha. It's a parsha about a tzaddik. It's a parsha about a tzaddik. What's the raya that it's a parsha about a tzaddik? The raya is that Besuel understood it. He didn't misconstrue it. He didn't misconstrue it. He didn't think that there's tricks. That tricks are being done on behalf of one thing or another. So much so. This is so true. This is so clear in the story that the feeling that Chazal had when they looked at that pasuk and said, Ponisi Habayis, was that there was a message there. And that he knew. You know, it makes sense. Right? It makes sense. If in Bava Kamma, it makes sense to me to say it's always Bava Kamma, right? If in Bava Kamma it makes sense to me that Hashor can be more than Serugin, because the Shor knows when it's Shabbos. Right? How does the Shor know when it's Shabbos? Because the Shor doesn't work on Shabbos. Just like the Baal HaShor. So the Shor doesn't know it's Shabbos. But it knows how it lives. It knows the rhythm of its life.
and the rhythm of the life of the show can include Shabbos. Malamalo knows that Monday, Tuesday to Friday, everybody's out there, Sunday to Friday, everybody's out there working. Shabbos, everybody's relaxing. Nobody's looking for the shore to pull anything, to drag anything, to work at anything. So in other words, the Gemara says, this is like Nigla, right? It's not the Gemara of Kabbalistic mysteries. It's the Gemara of Nigla, talking about Dinim Mominah. Somebody comes and says, this is a shore that gores only on Shabbos. The Gemara says, right. You can have a shore that only gores on Shabbos, and it will only be moored on Shabbos. Because the shore can have an awareness of the rhythm of the life in which it lives. And therefore, Chazal said, if that's the case, the shore can have a feeling for the distinction between mekomos, places that are tahorim, and places that are psulim, places that are forbidden to enter. And so they came to the conclusion that what the pasuk is trying to tell you is that Eliezer was on the rhythm of Avram Avinu, and the Gmalim, the camels, were in the rhythm of Avram Avinu. And that's why that was the sign that was chosen. It was a sign that was chosen. It's not that. It's a chesed. Listen. Rivka. What was the test of Rivka? According to Eliezer. And he said, I'm going to ask her for a drink. And if she gives the camels a drink, then I know. Oh, is that what you're looking for, guys? Like, you know, you go out with a girl. You say, can I have a drink of water? And she said, yeah, can I fill up your car? I mean, would you see this as a spiritual achievement? As what would happen if Rivka would have said, here's a glass of water, and here's the rest of the water. You want to feed your camels. I mean, watch, I feed your camels. I'm happy to give you the water, but I'm not working for you. I mean, I'm not hired yet. I mean, what's the act of chesed here? Chesed usually means I'm giving you something that you don't have on your own. The chesed was, Rivka said, these camels I want to give water to myself. Not because giving water to camels would have made any difference one way or another. As I said, here I have with me my anti-Avodah Zarah camels. My Shomer Shabbos camels. I mean, a camel is not a camel. This is a special camel. Now, if I ask a girl to give me water, and she says, oh, you... I'm giving you water because you're like, you know, a nice guy. You look like a fine fellow. You're probably, you know, all right. But look at those camels. I've never seen a camel like that before. And those camels, I would like to give water to. Then I know who she is. And so the Ran, the Chul, says as follows. That the machlokes between the Rambam and the Ravid is about the relevance of the siman. Because the Rambam says if you make up a siman, and then you do that, you say like three blue cars go by across the street. There's no connection between the siman and what you say you're going to do. He says that's not much. But if you test somebody, if you examine them, and you say, if they are really special, then they're special. So that's not called nachash. Isn't that what anybody would do? I mean, you say, look, I meet this girl, and I want to decide whether to marry her, right? So the one thing you can't do before you decide to marry a woman is be married to her for 40 years. Which is really what you have to do in order to make that decision. Right? So in other words, I mean, you make whatever you say, you know, whether you're a moderner, modern Orthodox, and you say, I go out a lot and eat a lot of ice cream, or you're less modern, and you say, eat your own ice cream, you know, like, I'll let somebody else decide whether you get it. It doesn't matter. You sow those. Anybody who's married for more than 2 weeks can tell you that you never realize for a moment what it's really like. By the time that's like the Yasoda Yasoda, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, you can think all you want. So what do you do instead? So you make up Simanim. Right, what else can you do? You say Simanim, you go and sit down and you say, so like there's stages, right? First, if you don't have a particular girl in mind, so you make up lists. Because without a particular girl in mind, the lists are always good. Like, you know, you want it to look, to be this tall, to look this way, to have this kind of background, to do this, that. As long as there's no girl involved. If you're not involved with it, once you get involved with somebody, so it's all her way. You can't make out the list because she doesn't fit into anything you thought you wanted, right? Not all the way. So then you say, oh, I'm going to make my decision based on something. Oh, what are you going to make it? If she calls in the next 10 minutes, right? She calls the next 10 minutes, we'll get married. So like what you do is you try to find out, you try to like make a criteria which seems to you to be important and hope for the best on all the rest, right? That's how you do it. So the Ran says if you do that, that's not called nachash. Not called nachash. And the Rambam could agree with that. But the Rambam said, so I don't understand, because the Rambam said this criteria of feeding the camels is not something that's so significant that it would determine who the wife of Yitzchak should be, and therefore it's nachash. Whereas the Ravid uses the specific language, what does he call him, Eliezer? One of the tzaddikim. And what does the Medrash in the office of Rav Nosson say? Geshem k'shad tzaddikim ayu chassidim, kach behemtom ayu tzaddikim, right? Remember the Ravid says tzaddikim, so that the Ravid says, we're not talking about Eliezer. We're talking about behemtom shel tzaddikim. And the test was a relevant test. And the relevance of the test was, can this girl who comes to feed, to give me water, can she sense the significance of coming from the house of Avram Avinu, so much so that the rhythm of the life of the animals is changed so dramatically that they remain with this anti-Avodah Zorah kind of attitude wherever they may be. So the importance of the story, and the reason it had to be told twice, and the reason the Torah had to tell us that it was told twice, was in order to create the world of Yitzchak, which was the world of Hashgacha, the understanding that God maintains intervention in this world. And that's why Rashi says, Yofa Sichosom shall Avdei Ha'ovos. Because the Sicha of the Avdei Ha'ovos that's put into the Gemara is representative of the Yesodei Hadas, of the foundations of religion. It's something that through learning we could never achieve. Though it is not a kind of thing that has to be logically derived and understood. Gufei HaTorah, there was the halachas in the Torah, the mitzvahs in the Torah, the dinim of Shabbos and Taras Mishpacha and all of that. We can understand, we can figure it out. When can we figure it out? Once we're committed to the idea that HaKadosh Baruch was concerned about us and could give us a Torah and could ask us to do mitzvahs. Where does the concern come from? Where does the recognition that there is such a concern on the part of HaKadosh Baruch come from as far as we're concerned? From the story of Eliezer and Rivka. Therefore Rashi says, Yofa Sichosam Shel Avdei Ha'ovos. Because the Sicha of Avdei Ha'ovos is about the Yesodei Hadas. It's about the elementary positions of Jewish religiosity. Everything else we can learn ourselves. But this recognition, which we can only get from the life of the Ovos and the Avdei Ha'ovos, had to necessarily be included in the Torah. Thank you.